Hi, I'm Leah LaChapelle, author of Unzipping Reality, 11 Steps to Create the World We Want, and host of Unzipping Reality, The Fourth Awakening. I am dedicated to the transforming of human consciousness on planet Earth in our lifetime. So trust, know, be, and do the process as we unzip reality. Good days, everyone. Welcome to Unzipping Reality, The Fourth Awakening. I'm Leah LaChapelle, your host, and my website is fearorlove.com. We're going to be talking, of course, about the love today, staying away from the fear. The love is where it's at right now, and right now is the new paradigm. Newsflash, we're here. We're there. How do I know that? Well, just look around. Talk with people. Ask people what it is that they truly want to get out of life. And they will reveal, more than likely, that their lives do not choose to be constrained by an old, worn-out system. The old paradigm. Hey, it's been great, folks, but we gotta go. So people are now yearning and breathing into, leaning into this new awareness that I like to call the fifth dimension or the new paradigm. And so let's just have a good time with it, all right? Don't strain. Just allow it to be here. Now you're gonna have to show up and be proactive. But we can all do that if we help one another. No one's doing this solo. We're all doing it together. And there is a beautiful team that is amassing. And I experience that team every time I step up to the microphone. Inger and Gary Purifoy there at the helm, making all of this happen on Metaphysical Talk Radio, and my fabulous guests. And my guest today, I'll just give you a tidbit, is Jason McLeod. And he is an intuitive empath. And he's going to be expanding our awareness today about the ability to interface at an altogether different level. But before I bring Jason up, let's go ahead and sign on. Traditionally, us love us, everyone. That's our established baseline frequency. So reality is now sufficiently unzipped. Been doing this and showing up for a number of years. It's time. It's time to stop denying that the portal is open. It's wide open. And there is this distinctive invitation for us to step on through and be who and what we really are. Joining me today in this great investigation is an investigator himself. Jason McLeod is a paranormal investigator. And as I said before, he is an intuitive empath. He has this ability to expand not only his awareness, but others as well. And he is the author of his latest book, Our Journey Home, The Handbook for the Transition. He's also written several other books, and these are a little bit different genre than maybe I would, you know, hang out in. And that doesn't mean a blooming thing, because in the new paradigm, we need everybody to bring forth their art, their expression. And so Jason is an expert on investigating something that he called in one of his books, Dark Siege. And he might touch on that in a little while. But Jason is involved in the intangible realm. He has feelings and emotions, and he receives messages. And I have read Our Journey Home and thoroughly enjoyed it. And it's all about this incredible transition that I suspect all of us will make at one point or another. Jason's website is McLeodMetaphysics.com, and McLeod is McLeod, McLeodMetaphysics.com. All right, so how'd I do, Jason? Welcome to Unzipping Reality.
Oh, well, thank you very much, and it's a pleasure to be on your show, and it's a pleasure to know you and to experience all of your wisdom, you know, every week at our circle, and I'm really happy to be here.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, yes, and I've known you now for a number of years, and you just keep expanding, Jason. I don't think you can keep growing taller. You're a very tall man.
And I am.
And that, you know, I think that works so well for you because you are on the circuit. You are putting yourself out there. You're touching people at many different levels, and you're just not afraid. So I would like to start there. The things that you write about and choose to be a part of can be scary for some of us because it's like the light wants to kind of recoil from the darkness. So balance that equation a little bit for us. How did you get started on your particular path? I mean, we could spend the whole show on that.
Sure. But
just give us a tidbit of what is it? Were you born this way?
Well, that's a good question. Were you born this way? I don't think any of us really understand who we are after we start being assimilated by society and by our parental, the way our parents steer us and the way our peers steer us and the way we experience this dimension and density. But I think, which is the subject of my next, most recent book, is that we are much more powerful and much more expansive and ancient than we ever will understand while we're experiencing this reality through the lens of the five senses integral to the human body. But so that was an interesting way you put that. But I've always known that I'm intimately and in eternally connected to my creator, the source of all that is, which is beyond any of the deities or demigods or figureheads that we've been presented with here in our society, which are all part of a control grid as far as I'm concerned, which is the way I've experienced it to be. So I have always been interested in the human spirit and the soul and what happens when we leave this physical body. We've never been given any answers. In fact, you know, the Bible teaches us that we'll sleep until the return. Well, I wanted to know. So being from Connecticut, I was always in the library in school, middle school and high school, studying mythologies and ancient, ancient mythologies and studying spirits and near-death experiences and things like that. That really fascinated me. But being from Connecticut, which is such a small state, we've all heard of Ed and Lorraine Warren. And they were and are still the pioneers of the modern paranormal investigation craze that thrives to this day. And their work has now been, turned into several major motion pictures, of course, but the content has been skewed, which is something that upsets me greatly. But anyway, so I wanted to learn more, and I picked up a book on the shelf in high school called The Demonologist, and it was a study about the most terrifying cases that Ed and Lorraine Warren have ever experienced. And I read it, and I had no interest at the time in getting involved, in fact, because it was so frightening. And apparently all those cases could be backed up in a court of law because there were so many witnesses to that phenomena. But it wasn't until 6 months later that I was in my car with my friend who was a current paramedic and a former Army combat medic. And we were listening to the radio about a case that the Warrens were investigating right here in Connecticut. And I said, turn to Lou, and I said, that would be so cool to work with them. And he said, yeah, no kidding. The very next day, Lou called me stunned and said he just got a phone call. He says, you aren't going to believe who just called me. I asked, well, who? And he said, Ed Warren. I was like, come on. Ed was looking for a paramedic for their team because they really were in combat situations in some of these cases where we were facing spirits that are not human in nature. And
I really want to know why were these cases so terrifying? Were these
spirits
that were hurting people? Were they harming people or just scaring them to death?
These were the most terrifying cases of inhuman diabolical oppression or infestation, which is the first phase, oppression, where they're actually going after the people who are embodied.
And then finally
possession. But the activity was just mind-blowing, the stuff that was happening. Like for instance, huge softball-size pieces of hail appearing just a few feet above the roof line, dropping on the roof, making thunderous commotion, and then disappearing before they ever hit the grass.
I see.
Things like that. Okay. Very bizarre phenomena, okay? And I don't know who in the right mind would want to experience that. I definitely wouldn't want to experience it. But
no.
I was fascinated by the whole possibility. So anyway, I call that the universal law of intention, where 6 months prior I had no interest in getting involved, and then I was with my friend and I said that would be so cool to work with them, and he said, yeah, no kidding. And then all of a sudden, here comes the phone call the very next day. So that's the law of conscious manifestation. I believe that firmly.
Yes.
And so the rest is history. I met them. He got to go to their Monday night meeting that week. And he told Lorraine, who is a light trance medium and psychic and wonderful, kind woman, who knows all about synchronicities. So she invited me for the weekend, the week following. And as soon as I met them, they basically welcomed us both in. And she asked me three very pointed questions, which are very important. She asked, how strong is your faith, honey? And I said, well, I have immense faith. I believe that I'm connected to my creator permanently and protected by him. And why do you want to get involved in work of this nature was the second question. And I said, well, I read The Demonologist. I was, concerned for the families involved and the people that were undergoing these terrifying experiences. And I want to be able to understand it and help them better if I could. And she asked, it's a calling then. And I said, I believe it is. So that's when she invited me to join their New England Society for Paranormal Research. And they sent Lou and I on our very first case the next night alone representing them. And that floored me as well, because we had no experience whatsoever. Yet here we were being sent to investigate a case on the Warren's behalof. And that completely changed my life. And it scared
Lou. They must have had more work to do than cover.
Well, there were quite a few cases. Connecticut is a very haunted area. New England is a very haunted area, simply because of all the death and the tragedy that's happened there. But that's how I got involved. My interest was in studying this phenomena, understanding it, helping people overcome these spirits and this activity, and doing my part to be a part of that. That was my intention.
Right. Yeah. I would suspect that one of your greatest challenges is to not be overcome by these kinds of influencing, seducing spirits.
Correct.
What do you do, Jason, to kind of protect yourself?
Mm-hmm.
How do you stay true to yourself when you're stepping in to these kinds of situations? Because it sounds like it could be incredibly dangerous.
Well, I know for myself, but I can't speak for anyone else. But I know, I've always known I'm protected. I've always known I'm here for a special purpose. I've always just believed, right, that they can't harm me. I'm not going to go and challenge them, but they're not going to harm me simply because I'm present. So
yeah.
That was my first intention. Intention is everything. So, and knowing you're protected and keeping yourself clear, meaning you're not under the influence of any drugs or alcohol or things like that, or those types of things. You're well rested, you're present, you're standing in your own power, which is the power of God within. So that's the way I approached it in the beginning, and nothing ever happened to me. And then I started to learn about the Christ light or the white light, which is just very similar to what I practice now, which is a golden light emanating from the heart, and knowing this is the power of my creator within me. protecting me and forming a field of golden energy, gold being a very high frequency. And then throughout the years, learning about smudging and saging, you know, with sage and holy oils and frankincense and myrrh, which are one of the, you know, the gifts given by the wise men, and there's a reason for that. And hyssop oil is very potent. But just visualizing and knowing and calling upon the protection of God, of the archangels, of Jesus, of visualizing armor and shields and fields and sacred geometry and all kinds of amazing things. But it all works and it's all potent. And the interesting thing that I learned from my experiences up in Salem, Massachusetts, where I was completely unguarded, and they tried to feast on me like I was a giant banquet of light,
wow.
Where I didn't realize that they were so serious about these types of things. There is a huge dark element up in that area in Salem, especially in October around Halloween, which is a giant festival for you know, witchcraft and black satanic magic and things like that. And I was just, completely protected, no problem whatsoever. And I had a rutilated quartz stone, which is something my one of my healing friends gave me, which is really powerful because we are solar beings. That popped right out of its mount the second I set up my table, my vendor table up in Salem. And I should have known that that was an attack because that was something that I used to defend myself against any kind of darkness. But things like that, they'll try to weave in and siphon your energy away from you because you're a potent source of energy, you know, God source energy, and they're depleting themselves by doing what they do. So they're it's really like a psychic vampirism. Yeah,
they really are, aren't they? Well, mm-hmm. One of the things that I've always enjoyed so much about you, Jason, is that you help other people to not fear,
right.
Because you don't have any fear. I mean, no. You would just walk into a quote unquote haunted house and mm-hmm. you wouldn't have any fear. Now, other people, I mean, it's like, I'm feeling the hair stand up on my arms right now just thinking about it, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like there's something about that I would rather not do. But for right. some reason, you have chosen this path. And so I want to ask you, when you're in certain situations, does your hair stand up ever? I mean, do you ever get any sort of sensory, like, oh, I need to get out of here?
No. In fact, the only time I was ever affected was in the very beginning. It was one of the first cases I was on with working with the Warrens. They weren't there personally, but there were about six of us in this home. And there was they described it as, I'm not clairvoyant. I just want to tell everybody that right now. My life was changed when I picked up the overwhelming grief or sadness that this one disembodied woman felt in a case. That was my first psychic experience. And that changed my life completely because seeing them would have been one thing, but to pick up the emotional grief that this woman, the sorrow and the sadness is the way I described it, as my jaw dropped and tears just streamed out of my eyes. Experiencing what some of these people, which are conscious awareness minus the physical body, who are staying electromagnetically bound to their former surroundings and the former land or property that they were on. In this case, this woman was killed on her way to give birth. She was in a horse and wagon accident. The wagon slipped over the edge, and both the body and the mother and the child she was about to deliver were both killed. But she went right to the house, to the midwife, where she was going to deliver the baby. And where's my baby? Where's my baby? Can you imagine the grief of knowing that you're going to be delivering a baby and then your life is cut short? And
so her disembodied spirit went
correct.
There.
Right. Oh, and that's the emotion. That's the emotion that I picked up. And that changed my life forever because that made me want to help these people cross over properly, not stay earthbound, but cross over to where her baby will be. Because the consciousness that was going to animate the body of her baby was either never came down and from the higher dimensions and fused into the body that it was going to animate, or it crossed over immediately because children apparently really know what to do in case that happens, tragedy strikes. But my goal was to help her understand and help others. That changed my life because that made me decide I'm going to help people who are embodied deal with the grief associated with the loss of loved ones or the perceived loss of loved ones, and also help those who have left their bodies cross over correctly so they're not stuck here in, you know, perpetual grief. But right. It was a,
and
yeah.
So you have compassion for these spirits. Should we call them spirits? Is that disembodied?
Well, our awareness. We're awareness without form when we're outside of a physical body. Okay. We're just fields of awareness.
Okay, so these formless fields of awareness.
Right.
Do you have a way to detect, I guess it would be discernment, that these spirits might possibly lie to you? Like, oh, here comes Jason McLeod. He's got a real compassionate heart. Let's put one over on him just for fun.
It hasn't
happened. And just go, boo-hoo, I'm so sad.
Oh, no, that's never happened. That's never happened. But the case that I was going to talk about where I felt overcome or was a little startled was not because of my own reaction, but so we were in this house where apparently there were demonic entities, and the people that were psychic saw this form that would stand out in pitch blackness. It'd be like a negative blackness standing on the stairs. And they're describing it. So I pulled out a pair of blessed rosary beads that my grandmother had given me. And at the time, I was approaching everything through a Catholic perspective, which is what the Warrens could approach everything through. And I had a pair of blessed rosary beads that my grandmother gave me, and I pulled them from my pocket and put them in my palm to hold them, not as a challenge, but as a method of self-defense, just because they're saying this thing's there. And I said, I received the impulse from whatever it was, my higher self or whatever, to put those into my hand. All of a sudden, I couldn't see it or feel it, but this entity on the stairs went right up to me. And they're like, Jason, what did you do? Right? And somebody else, Donna said, Andy said, he has rosary beads. And Donna says, put them away quick. I'm like, okay. So I'm fumbling with them. And that's when I became startled and stuck them in my pocket. And then it went right back up to the stairs. So by me brandishing the rosary beads was to it a challenge. Me against you, let's go, right? But that was not my intention. Intention is everything, like I said. My intention was just as an added level of defense, but it senses it. And why does it sense it? Because everything is vibration. So if rosary beads are blessed or infused with the power of God, the creator, the all that is, as a high potent, high frequency item, and it is an extra low frequency diabolical entity, it senses that change in vibration, will come right up and you know, try to see what's going on. So, anyway, so that's the only time I was ever affected.
Okay, so where are those rosary beads now?
You know, I have no idea. I have moved so many times. I can't even remember where half of my stuff is. But so yeah, that's my intention was then and is today to help families deal with hauntings of by human spirits, disembodied human spirits, usually the spirits of loved ones who are lingering around, or inhuman diabolical spirits or demons, devils, such as a hierarchy and things like that. I prefer not to have to get involved in that type of stuff, but I just handled a case up in November up in upstate New York with the help of Bill Bean, and he's a phenomenal spiritual warrior, a friend of mine. We do this circuit together. We do all the big paranormal conventions and so forth. And when I go into these conventions, you know, I consider myself a light warrior or somebody who's here as a, you know, an interdimensional conduit of creator's love and compassion to be here and to stand against this evil and to rid this earth of this evil. And when I go to these paranormal conventions or Scare Fest or Terror Con or Horror Fest or all these things, it's loaded with people who I normally wouldn't associate with because they're all into that, you know, death and fright and terror and bloodshed and things like that. That's not what I want to surround myself with. But I go in there, I call myself a double agent because my Dark Siege books are written in a cinematic writing style where I've recreated the case in startling detail in a like a horror fiction format, which is revealing what happened in this case. So like you're reading a horror fiction book, but what makes them so unique and what the primary message is the 100-page chapter-by-chapter analysis at the end where I explain everything we're talking about right now, who I am, how I got involved, how I met the Warrens, and my first several cases in detail so the reader understands who I am. But then get into the meat and bones of this analysis, which is why these things happen to some people and not others, why some people experiencing haunting phenomena and others do not, and how it's related to the pineal gland, which is our sixth sense, our third eye, the gateway to the soul. You know, it's got rods and cones, just like our eyes do, and it's photosensitive. Mm-hmm. And but then explain what the family did right and wrong every step of the way by comparing activity in each chapter to other very well-documented cases, so you understand that these entities have the same modus operandi, or MO, always, which is to terrorize and isolate and siphon all this fear energy off, which is a fuel source for them, and at the same time, it weakens the people involved. So it's always a campaign of terror, and how to understand that love conquers terror, conquers fear always.
Oh, okay? What good news.
Yes.
That is, and you have lots of good news interspersed in,
yes,
in your Dark Sage material.
Right, right.
One thing that I really appreciated in your messages in Dark Sage was the fact that you advise people to never play with a Ouija board.
That's the primary reason I got involved and I wrote the book at all. The first reason is we're never going to talk about the case. And I decided after finally getting on Facebook back in 2010 and realizing there were so many people out there advertising themselves as, you know, paranormal investigators and so forth, and how so many of them use Ouija boards and other methods of divination and so forth going into these homes when they really have shouldn't be doing such things. And I said, I've worked with the pioneers of the whole field, so I am going to, you know, jump on this in this situation and warn people that don't be too eager to go peeking behind the curtain, because you may not like what you find, and you better have somebody there who you can call upon who can protect you and, you know, right any wrongs that you commit when you're interacting with people who are undergoing these types of horrific situations. I mean, it's a mental, emotional, physical, spiritual attack that a lot of these people are undergoing. So I decided to write about it. And I thought, just because I wrote the book, I have a bachelor's in English creative writing, by the way. So
I'm not surprised. You're an excellent writer.
Thank you.
It's a little scary for me, just just to go on record. Sure. I really liked our journey home. That was a little more Leah friendly.
Let's go to the Leah friendly material right now.
Just so people know,
right,
Jason, you are a very good writer.
Oh, thank you.
And if you weren't, it wouldn't be so scary.
Right.
Just like bring it to life.
Yeah.
My goodness. Well, I would like to know, you have in your Our Journey Home book, which is a beautiful book. It's a big book, and it's really a gift to us. You talk kind of deep into the book, maybe even at the end, about how there is actually no hell, mm-hmm, or eternal damnation. Are you now? You're sure about that?
I'm sure about that.
Yay!
I'm sure about that.
Okay.
Because
good.
What's fascinating is even the Warrens went on record. I mean, they're devout Catholics. Ed's no longer among us in the physical body, but Lorraine is, and they would say in their lectures, you know, we're devout Catholics, but what we're taught to believe about what happens when our physical body dies is simply not accurate, right? And so we are infinite fields of conscious awareness, individuated aspects of the totality of source, creator. Like I use the analogy of the sun. In fact, there's a great analogy in the book where we are the equivalent of a solar flash or a solar flare or a spark cast off from the great luminous being that is our creator. And we're all one in that regard. In the third dimension, we're not all one as far as appearances are concerned, because we each have our own mothers and fathers and our own sisters and brothers and our own lifestyles and lifetimes and things like that. But on a higher level, we are all one because we're all, you know, these sparks cast off from the creator. So I've always known that that is the case. And that's why if you are an aspect of the all that is and are protected by this incredible power, what can defeat you and what can overcome you? Nothing. So as long as you know and you stand in that power, I am the light of God. I am the love of God manifested on this earth, as are we all. Okay. But that's my mantra, you know, when I walk into these homes. So if I am this light in the darkness, there's no darkness that it can extinguish the light. And as long as you stay true to no, understanding that, you're invincible in that regard. And that's why I don't get frightened with regard to these cases. But it's also, like I said, I believe a calling, and anybody can do this if they have that understanding and knowing and belief, you know. So I think I went off on a tangent here. But the reason I wrote Our Journey Home is because originally it was just going to be filled with all the beautiful cases of helping people with loved ones who were lingering around after their funerals, who didn't know what to go do with themselves, or who hadn't finished business. All very beautiful, peaceful stories about helping families deal with human spirits, nothing terrifying. And the number of people that who had read my Dark Seed books and came up to me at the conventions that I was at or attending and speaking at, in many cases, would say, your book helped my mother lose her fear of letting go and leaving her body. And I don't want to have to hand somebody an absolutely horrifying ordeal to get through just to get to the analysis section, just to understand hauntings in general and what happens when we leave our bodies. I wanted to create something beautiful to hand people. And then I switched gears and said, I need to write a book for the people who are in hospice and for the people who are their caregivers and the people who are getting on in their years and people that are, you know, worried about their health and people who will be transitioning. So it's a handbook for the transition. But then I realized it's a book that everybody needs because nobody's taught what to expect during the period of time in between that we're, you know, slowly shifting in and out of our bodies. It's a gradual process up into the point where we're going to be seeing loved ones and slipping in and out of our bodies and being greeted by loved ones and beings that we don't even know who are calming us and trying to tell us that everything will be okay and then leading us on and so forth, and what to expect once we do leave the body. So it's really like a afterlife handbook as far as what you're going to be able to do regarding the inability to affect physical objects because you're vibrating at a state that's incompatible with them. You're vibrating at such a high rate that you can't affect anything that's in a more dense physical or more dense vibration. So you won't be able to pick up the glass of water or move the piece of paper on the table to get your loved one's intention because you'll pass right through it. You'll pass through doorways. You'll pass through, anywhere you think about, you will be instantly. Instant thought transference.
This is so cool the way you're taking away some of our fear.
Right.
Because it's the unknown that is so scary. And that's why people fear death, because we don't know what happens. And we're so afraid that it's going to be so painful. We won't be able to endure it. And it will be like a hell. And so you take away the fear of that.
Right.
I'd like to ask you, have you yourself ever had a near death experience?
I have not left my body. And although I tried through astral projection tapes, I used to do those when I was like 18 years old, trying to leave my body. But I said, if I ever left my body, I'd never come back because I'd just be exploring the universe.
Who'd
want to come back to this mundane thing if I can be exploring everywhere? But no, I haven't. And I've had plenty of psychic experiences, though, that convinced me that this is all real. And my experience is working with these spirits and with the seeing what's happening with the people around me. Though I've been protected and not been attacked, others around me have been very greatly negatively affected and so forth, especially other investigators and so forth. And
I've never been, I have not myself had a near-death experience. However, I've had like some close calls, like in traffic and so forth. Like, it's like if that had lined out just a hair differently, I wouldn't be here right now. So that's kind of what is a near miss. You know, you nearly miss life into death, you know. And those are very stimulating experiences because it's like, I guess I'm still supposed to be here. And so that's very validating. that that we are supposed to be here. And I'd like to ask you to get in just a little bit. You know, you have so many talents. We're just barely scratching the surface here. And again, Jason's website is McLeod, McLeod, metaphysics.com. Could you talk to us a little bit? And you've touched on this because of your bearing when you enter into these situations, because you know who you are, or at least you've got the demons fooled. you know who you are. Talk to us a little bit about sovereignty, because I know that you include that in your book, Our Journey Home.
Okay. So when I touched upon sovereignty, we are sovereign, right? We are divine aspects of our Creator. No one, therefore, has the authority, whether we freely give it to them or whether we presume they have any authority over us, including any religious figureheads that might appear to us in spirit form, whether it can take the guise of an archangel or take the guise of Jesus or Buddha or anybody else, or our parents or our teachers, right? Or anybody, our priests, or anybody that we've, you know, given our power away to. When you leave your body and you're confronted by someone or something in whatever guise, no one has the right to tell you or to force you or to coerce you into doing anything or going anywhere until you are darn good and ready to. So come with me. You have to come into this light, or come with me now. We're going to go, you know, to a certain location, or you have to go and reincarnate right away to atone for all of your sins. And here's what you have to do. Put the brakes on and say, I am free. I am sovereign. You know, be gone from my presence. You know, I intend, my main intention in writing this book was to basically help people understand that they are not their body, right? They're not the circumstances of their life that they just led. They're not their material possessions or their color of their skin or the size or the shape or the age of their body or their diseases that they presume that they have. Material possessions or wealth or your gender, any of those things. Those are all just aspects of the current life experience, like a giant role-playing game that you've just left. Who you are is infinite consciousness, and you are far beyond any of the things that you went and experienced. And you have the choice and have the free will to say, I choose to return home to my Creator. Creator, come and retrieve me now. Not going into any perceived light or tunnel of light, you know, who really knows where that goes? And in fact, the plethora of research recently is that that could be the great trap. That could be the reincarnation bug zapper that zaps all of your memories away and sends you hurling right back into the wheel of reincarnation into a new body and starting all over again, wondering, who am I? Where do I come from? Why am I here? And where am I going? So yes. None of us remember that until we expand our awareness outside of this construct or matrix or whatever. It's been called many names, reality or simulation. There's so many scientific studies saying that we live in a giant computer simulation or we're, you know, who knows? But all I know is that whatever it is, we can expand our awareness without the need of any kind of psychedelics. The Gnostics used to use elixirs and potions way back in the 2nd century to try to expand their awareness outside of this dimension. And they wrote it in all of their texts are provided for us, at least those that we've discovered in the Nag Hammadi scriptures, Naghamadi, or two M's. That's fascinating reading. Or, you know, anybody who takes, you know, ayahuasca, which I haven't tried, or peyote or mushrooms or whatever it is, to expand your awareness outside of what we believe to be physical reality. Quantum physics has proven that we do not live in a physical universe, that everything is vibration.
Yes.
Everything is vibration. So if you want to be protected against dark forces and against people trying to leech off your energy, raise your vibration, raise the vibration of your place, of your living space. Okay. And there's plenty of ways to do that. But the number one way is just be loving and kind and compassionate and forgive yourself and forgive all others and to love every aspect of creation and get out into nature and to take off your shoes and stick your feet in the grass and you know, feel the earth and the energy from the earth. We're all so isolated by wearing rubber soles and living in metal buildings and just isolating our energy and being surrounded in all kinds of Wi-Fi fields and you know, cell phones and all that stuff distracts us and disconnects us, or at least at a minimum minimizes our connection to the earth and to this life force energy that's flowing through the planet and through each other.
Right.
Coming to us from God and from even from our sun.
You know? Well, and I want to go back just for a second about these beings. You know, everybody is going to make their transition and drop their physical body. We know this. And so when we do this, I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that we still maintain our awareness. And sure. Then when we are going through this experience, our awareness encounters these beings that we've been told will take away our sense of isolation, will bless us and never harm us, you know, in these kinds of icons. And what I think that I'm hearing you say is it's very possible that they could be posers. Am I accurate on that? That there's a possibility that they're misrepresenting?
Don't give your power away to any other being. Know that you are an immortal, eternal, infinite field of awareness that is permanently connected to the Creator. You were created with a purpose, and your purpose was not to bend the knee and give your power away to anybody who seems to be more powerful or more enlightened or from a different dimension or a different planet or, you know, no matter how they appear to be. What's interestingly is that so many people, including that one neuroscientist or neurosurgeon, talk about the same thing. When you vacate the body, we're so limited in a physical body, it's really pathetic. Cats and dogs can see more in the electromagnetic spectrum than we can.
Oh,
horses
yeah.
can too. So the mathematical equation is that we can see 0.005% of the matter, space, and energy in the known universe, and only a tiny fraction of that, which is visible light. So that's all we can see, less than 1% of 1% what's out there. And yet we say if we can't see it, it doesn't exist. But when you
right.
vacate,
that's
when you
the
vacate,
ego.
Yeah, and when you vacate the human body, you're like, oh my God, it's like taking off a deep sea diving helmet once you come out of a dark ocean. And all of a sudden, you can see so much more, you know, and you're so much more connected. And the people who have had these profound near-death experiences can understand that there is no time, you know, there is no space. Everything is oneness. I understand everything. I'm connected. They know your thoughts, your feelings. And the same thing happens when people take these amazing trips out of body using, psychedelic things. They're expanding so far beyond outside of this limitation that we're experiencing this reality with. So we need a spacesuit to go into outer space so that we can function and explore that environment. We need a deep sea diving suit to go deep under the ocean to explore that environment and survive. And we need a physical body to experience this very dense dimension. And the physical body is a limitation, it's so limited compared to who we are and what we are, that we really won't even understand. People can't even put it into words when they return. They see colors that you can't even describe because they don't exist through the physical five senses, right? And sounds and shapes and beings that are all around us, but we can't even describe them because there's no frame of reference for other people to understand them with. Understand those things with. They'll blame it on your medical procedure or medications or trauma
right.
or stress or whatever it is. Yet they're very real to you. So even Einstein on his deathbed said, "I knew nothing," because then his awareness expanded so immensely that he's what I relayed was nothing compared
Isn't
to what it really is. Sure.
So, isn't that just incredible? Well, I want to just continue along that line
sure.
of sovereignty, because I know you a little bit, and I just have such an appreciation for when you're not exploring all of these other, interdimensional mysterious things. You are living your life, and mm-hmm. you're living your life as a man and not a citizen or a resident. You know, right. You are a man that is alive, and you are expressing yourself in such a way that you choose not to come under a lot of the legal system. And I know that that's incredibly challenging for you, but you know, I think we've already established you kind of enjoy taking risks. So it's like amazing that you're not just a one size fits all here. I mean, you've got all these different pathways that you've chosen in this lifetime. And so you are also not afraid to travel instead of drive. Mm-hmm. And you, if you encounter someone who thinks that they are a legal enforcer, you will not take that. You will engage them at a higher level probably than they have access to. Right. And I just wanted to put that out there because that's a huge aspect of your non-fear element that you embody. And so it's not just, you know, when you're putting on your investigator cloak, you're out there 24/7 living and breathing this. And it's just so awesome. I really want to thank you because I've learned a lot from you and basically just how you take life on. I think it's just absolutely amazing. We're coming down to the last portion of the broadcast, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to also talk about another whole element that you enjoy in your life, and that is your music. Mm-hmm. You have a band here in Austin where you live in Austin, but you also live in other locations. But I know that when you're in Austin, it's the live music capital of the world. So, you know, how can you resist? You've got to show up as a musician here. So you have a band called Shadow Ministry.
Right.
You want to talk a little bit about how you are using music to minister to the shadow?
Well, it's an interesting name, and obviously you need to have a cool name that has never been taken before, which is very hard with right? the 18 trillion garage bands out in the world. But Austin is the live music capital of the world, and I moved down here originally from Connecticut in 1998, and then went back to Connecticut in 2000, and then came back in 2006, and then the economy tanked in 2008, so I went back home to Connecticut. And then I came down here to check on all my stuff in storage in 2010, and that's how I became aware of the Circle of Intention meeting. And I was blessed to meet you and attend our gathering on Tuesday night. And I said, Austin, this is where my spiritual family is. Okay, so Austin is also a very awake and an aware community, and that was a big factor for me to have an entire circle of like-minded beings like yourself here in Austin, and that was something I yearned to be a part of. So just want to put that out there that, you know, it is, Austin has many wonderful aspects to it. But so I decided the second time I moved to Austin, if I could sell my house for top dollar, buy a brand new house for the same mortgage amount, and get a great band together, I would. So that's what happened exactly. I intended it. I put out that intention, and then it manifested, and that's the way that worked too. But the first time around, we were together for less than 6 months, the original lineup, and we had tour opportunities from Dream Theater, another band, I can't even pronounce their name, but three of our members couldn't go on the road, so we were literally going nowhere with them. We lost a major opportunity, Dream Theater being the most incredible progressive metal band in all of the world. So we missed that opportunity. But I intended that, Leah, and I had a dream I was discussing. We're talking with James LaBrie, who is the lead vocalist for Dream Theater, in a stage, like an arena type of stage theater area behind in the back, and then it manifested for us. So that's interesting. So I know big things are going to manifest for this band, this new version of Shadow Ministry. So I came up with a name because, much like my books, I'll go into these dark places like the paranormal conventions where people are, you know, painted up with skull tattoos and are just, you know, all these, you know, they want the terror and the fear and all that stuff. And I'll go in there and I'll present them with a terrifying ordeal, to be sure, in the Dark Siege books, which are available at darksiege.com. Hope I could throw that out there.
Sure.
DarkSiege.com. And also to help them understand that the dark way is not the way to go. Okay. Don't play with Ouija boards and don't dabble in the occult and don't put your focus and your intention on all this death and terror and horror, because it's affecting your consciousness. So with the Shadow Ministry band, I rewrote some of the original songs, and then we wrote completely new ones. And I came up with an entire theme. And the theme is, it's set in ancient times. I play the role of an apprentice in an ancient Gnostic order. And I'm beguiled by these shadowy spirits who basically are tempting me to go and steal the forbidden tome from the master's chamber, the master of the order, to gain power for myself and to, you know, use it to, you know, make myself more powerful. And at the end of the song, I get the book. And then the second song is where I instantly regret it, because I realize these forces are very, very powerful, and that I was deceived by the dark spirits, which is always the case. Okay. You're never going to get power from these beings. You'll get a temporary increase in power or whatever it is that you're seeking, but they'll always come back after you for payment.
Yeah.
And you're stuck in this pact with them. And it's always disastrous, right? And that's what the whole reason I tell everybody not to do it. So the third song is called The Changed Man. And that's where I, as the apprentice, I throw away my hatred and I, you know, renew my faith and restore balance to the order and vow revenge against these dark spirits, or at least to make them, push them out of my life and out of the lives of others, and to prevent others in the order from making the same mistakes. So that's what it's really all about, is I come out in these big flowing black robes with a big hood, you know, and I have my face painted, and we have all this fog machines going and everything. And if anybody wants to see the first show we just did, it's on just Google Shadow Ministry, or YouTube Shadow Ministry Live at the Hole in the Wall. It's actually a pretty decent sized club, but that was our debut. And our next show is coming up this Friday at the Dirty Dog here in Austin, which is opening for a national act, which is what our goal is. But, you know, I can go into these places, and I even went into a metal show one time watching my bass player play with another band. This is a couple of years ago, specifically to try to raise the vibration in the place, in there and just visualize myself as a pillar of golden light expanding and filling the whole room, because a lot of these places are just really dark places, and they're filled with all kinds of negative, extra low frequency music. It's just not harmonious for the body and the spirit. And I just went in there as an experiment to see how I could affect the whole area. And make no mistake, if you're a high vibrational being and you're full of love and heart-centered compassion, you absolutely are affecting everyone around you.
Of course.
Because our electromagnetic field goes well beyond the reach of our arms. And the Institute for Heart Math has determined that the heart is the greatest electromagnetic field. So guess what? If you're full of love and compassion toward everyone that you meet, and you see the divine in everybody else, your high vibrations will affect everyone else. Just as the low vibrational people will you know, bring people down and bring them into their energy field. So it's all about raising your vibration, keeping yourself clear, and
I think we've done it.
Yes,
yeah,
definitely. I think it all the time.
Well, I appreciate that. I think we've done it today. And that was the firm intention, was to raise the vibration, to take away some of the fear, or about all the fear of death and dying. And you have really done a great service in writing Our Journey Home, the handbook for the transition.
Thank you.
You know, yeah, any of our listeners, if you know of someone who really doesn't know a whole lot about metaphysics, and maybe you detect that they might have some trepidation about passing over, they might be in hospice, who knows? Mm-hmm. This would be a very nice gift. And I just want to say in the closing seconds here that in the very back, you've gifted people with some gorgeous, really, they're frameable art. Some beautiful messages and affirmations that right. you can cut out and frame. But we are out of time. Jason okay. McLeod, thank you so much for being my guest today. It's been just a real pleasure to kind of open up some of these things and share the love and share the light.
Thank you. So, can I leave yeah. my email address for people if they want to contact me regarding any of that books and
Do
stuff?
It. Do it.
Okay, it's McLeod, McLeodtx. I'm sorry, McLeod Metaphysics, MetaphysicS at protonmail.com. And if you wanted an autographed copy of my Our Journey Home, you can just email me. We can arrange it that way. Otherwise, it's available through Amazon.
Awesome.
And my other books are on Amazon. I have phenomenal reviews. Dark Siege, right. The Connecticut Family's Nightmare, and Dark Siege 2, The Nightmare Returns. Thank you, Leah, so much.
Oh, thank you too, Jason. All right, we are out of time. Leah LaChapelle signing off, saying, oneness happens. It is the great letting go and letting in with allowance and balance. Trust the process. Know the process. Be the process. And do the process as we unzip reality. FearOrLove.com. Bye-bye, everyone.